VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
I get there, like, she breaks up with me at the state, like, we're driving back to her house, like, so I'm breaking up with you, and I meet her new boyfriend that night. I'm there because I'm 24 hours late. I'm only there for 2 days. I'm there for like 50 hours. And then I get in the train to come home and I'm delayed 24 hours on the way home. I arrive at 3:28 a.m. at the bus stop near my school. And I like walk home, take a shower and drive to work. No sleep. But it's such a great story.
Wait, and I'm pretty sure your wallet got stolen too.
Yes, my wallet got stolen. I forgot about that. I lost my ID.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Gentlemen, it is 1991, but before we get to 1991, it is post-Thanksgiving. Did we gain any weight?
Oh, I did the weigh-in this morning, and it was not pretty at all.
I actually did the weigh-in this morning, and was exactly the same.
Oh,
so I'm thrilled.
Jeff.
Thrilled, because I was... Now, having said that, I went into Thanksgiving on a low note. I had put on a little weight in the 2 weeks leading up to Thanksgiving,
okay.
So I was very worried about the avalanche. But I have plateaued, and now this week's about... I'm in a good shape, though. B and I ran the Oakland Turkey Trot Thursday morning.
All right.
And I got a good run in yesterday, so there's been some improvement.
I ran the Asheville Turkey Trot. The whole Plain family got out there.
Oh, that's great.
On Thanksgiving morning.
It was fun.
So painful.
And I ran my fucking mouth.
By the way, I refuse to accept a podcast that does not begin, "Fellas." I don't know how I feel about
shoot.
Your new
Did
intro.
I not? I'm so.
You started it this way. Okay, so 1991. Let's talk about Thanksgiving.
I'm all business. Upset about my weight gain. Fellas, how are you? It is a cold night in Asheville. What is it? Monday night, we got to turn this thing around by Wednesday morning at 8 a.m.
Well, talk real fast. How cold is cold? Is it in the 30s? How cold are you?
Yeah, it's 32 degrees right now.
Woo!
What is it in Knoxville, Ben?
I got to check. It's somewhere there for sure. Going down to 23 tonight.
See? Oh, my God. Yes. It was 73 degrees today.
We get the weather. We get the health update and the commute. How's the commute, Jeff?
Terrible.
Okay.
Commute's always terrible. As a public safety announcement to all of our listeners, please remind your children to look both ways before they cross the street, and then look both ways a second time, because my eldest was actually struck by a vehicle crossing the street legally without headphones or a phone in his hand.
So
Monday of this break, he is fine. He got a concussion. We had a very exciting trip to the emergency room. When you're going over crosswalk rules with your children, like, you want to emphasize that shit. And when you have teenage drivers, tell them to triple check at crosswalks before they
on a swivel.
Blow through the box. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that, but I'm glad he's doing okay.
He's fine. He had plenty of brain cells to... He didn't really.
As Ben said, he had his bell rung, and that's all.
That's right.
First of all, that's false.
And 50-year-old white guy's parlance, he had his clock cleaned, but he's all right.
Put a little mud on it. Get out
there. He didn't need that third set of digits. He count to 100. He didn't need to count to 1,000. He's not like a mathematician.
The podcast sends its love his way.
Much appreciated.
Why don't we do that with a little music? Because I know he's going to love this song. This is the Grammy winner.
It really speaks to his generation as well.
1991.
This is for you, big boy.
By the way, you're going to play it?
No, go ahead.
We have been on an unroll. We've been on an anti-roll.
Uh-oh.
With the Grammy.
Oh, yeah. It's not about to.
I'm going to go ahead and speculate that this year is not going to improve my mood.
You should sit down.
It's the Grammy winner.
Unforgettable with Love by Natalie Cole.
Oh, this hurts my feelings so bad.
Unforgettable.
Go ahead and pause because we've already heard that song. Is there anything else on this record?
Yeah, what's the B-side of Unforgettable?
Yeah, what else is on the record?
Let's do the top. Here's the lead off track.
The very thought of you. And I forget to do.
I already want to do harm to myself.
The little ordinary things that everyone ought to do.
Can I stop now? There's a version of Route 66 on here. Let's give a little bit of that. Let's hear it.
Oh, for sure. Thank you.
Let's hear that. They rock.
By the way,
that's
the rockin' new style. Ooh, jazzy.
This sounds like what Jessica Rabbit would sing to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so cliche.
If you ever plan to motor west.
Okay, I'm done.
Oh, okay. Lord, that was so brutal.
Something they would have sold.
So first of all, I think we should just be absolutely clear.
Yeah.
That Nat King Cole's like actual career is fine.
Yeah.
He's a tremendous guy. He's got multiple different jazz standards. He's fine. That's not the problem with this at all. Right?
No.
I mean, it's 1991 and they're like, what was popular 50 years ago? 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's just.
I mean, this is going to be like Sean Lennon's going to put out an album with his dad this year, and it's going to win the Grammy. Like that's the equivalent of this.
Oh,
like, insane! Right.
That's really conceivable. That would be an equivalent.
I was writing when that producer hired me for the Janis Joplin screenplay, I was like, really? Like people want to see a Janis Joplin movie right now? He's like, oh, she was a big star. I'm like, that was 50 years ago.
She was cool, though. Besides, they already made that movie. It was Bette Midler's The Rose in 1979.
That's correct.
So you could just change that around. There's a great 30 Rock where they're trying to do a Janis Joplin biopic, but they can't get the rights. So they're doing a Janie Jimplin biopic. It's so great.
So, Ben Barton, you have been a big defender of artists who go get that money.
Like, yeah.
You go ahead. You do what you got to do. You get the bag.
That's so different.
Are you saying that with Natalie?
No, I really can't help this at all. There's nothing I have for this. And also, I speculate on this. I'm just going to re-speculate. This woman hates her dad. She never met her dad. She's literally like, I hated that freaking guy. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to exhume him. I'm going to jam him in and I'm going to just glom onto it. And it's like blood money. It's like Vergilt. Like it's not good at all here.
Oh, everything about this is so bad. The playing is so hackneyed. The arrangements are so threadbare. I mean, it really.
Wow.
And let's really state it plain. Like Natalie Cole, she's a fine singer. But she's not a great singer. Like her voice doesn't come in on track one. You're like, oh, well, I understand now. I mean, it sounds like if Shauna Morrison took Tupelo Honey and sang all over it and stuck it out there with her dad without her dad's permission. Like, that's kind of what it sounds like.
By the way,
that's
preferable. We should work on that.
It'd be great. Tim would love it.
What we say.
A whole new fresh take on the classics.
Careful what we say about Van Morrison. He does have an album this year.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be 100 tracks this year.
Hey, by the way, I looked up
track
Nat
6
King Cole
will be called
on Wikipedia.
I'm in my kitchen.
There is a building that is known as the house that Nat King Cole built. Can you name it?
No. Huh.
The Capitol Records building in LA.
No way. That makes
sense. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
And that's a beautiful, spectacular building. And that's a fitting legacy right there. They should have just stopped. He had the building. Yeah. No need for unforgettable.
Yep.
Put your songs in the vault. All right. Well, let's keep going on the 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys podcast on the Music City Drive-In podcast network. So many plane crashes, terror attacks, and coups in 1991. Like, I couldn't keep track. It was
Timmy, I love it, man.
Horrifying.
This is the best. This is what people come for sure.
It really is.
First we bury Nat King Cole, and then we just scooch right to terror attacks. Let's do
I assume everybody stops listening as soon as you say our three albums. Like, well, the good part's over, and then they
funnily enough, we haven't had a groundswell of support from the audience about bringing back our NASA references. Because there's a real good Gemini discovery this year, but you guys banned space, I guess. All right, so let's go right off the bat to the Invitation to Cynicism. Ben Barton, you're gonna bear the brunt of this examination.
Fair.
This is the year that Anita Hill accuses Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment and goes before, I guess, the Judicial Committee?
Yeah, totally.
To tell her story.
Chaired by Joe Biden.
Yeah, how did you process that then? And what do you think about it as you look back on it now?
Yeah, so I have a really rough and ready, and it's not a technical legal thing, about whether I decide that I'm going to, basically, my test for believing these sorts of accusations is, if it was fake, would you have made this up? And I mean, her story, the details of her story were so deeply insane that I was like, how long would it take you to come up with pubic hair and a Coke can? Like, that's the sort of thing that somebody said to you that you never, ever, under any circumstances would
have thought
make that. Right, because I mean, like it's a lot easier to be like, he called me into my office. He said he asked me to do oral sex. I refused and he didn't give me a promotion. Like, that's a really vanilla story. I'm not saying those stories can be true too. I'm not saying those stories are false. I'm just saying when they tell a story that's so insane, there's no way that they would have made it up. I'm like, well, that seems likely to be true for sure.
Right.
I mean, all of that being said, and this will be a very unpopular opinion for most people who are hearing this, Clarence Thomas is an amazing dude. Like, he grew up in like deep, deep, deep poverty. He's one of the poorest people to ever make it onto the Supreme Court. He lived out in the outskirts of Savannah, Georgia, in a community that did not speak English as his first language. And Jeff, maybe you'll know the language, like Gulichi, or
is it Gula?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they spoke an African former slave dialect until he was 8 when he moved into Savannah. And then he went to a all-Black Catholic school and then integrated a white Catholic school in 11th grade. He's just an amazing, amazing person to achieve what he achieved in his life. And again, I'm not here to defend any of the Anita Hill stuff. I'm just saying it's an amazing American story.
Do you know what the confirmation vote was?
Tell us.
52-48.
Close.
Pretty close.
That was close. I don't remember it being that close. That's interesting.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm totally 100% with Ben on that. As soon as that Coke can thing happened, I was like, that guy's dirty. There's no way he didn't say that. It was just such a... And of course, I'm like, just being the kind of dude that says things like that probably is a red flag for the Supreme Court. But
oh, really putting your opinion out there, huh?
Well, you know, the thing I want to push back. I have this question about Ben because I know some of that stuff from Clarence Thomas because Ben has told it to me before. But what do you make of the 30 years of silence on the bench, like just no talking for decades and decades? Is that because he's got nothing to say? He's in over his head. He's just waiting for marching orders. Once he didn't talk for 5 years, it became a cool thing that was his thing, and so he just kept it up. Like, how do you read his like
silence,
total silence through three or four generations of decisions?
So first, he has started asking questions.
Right.
Yes, now, second, yeah.
There's a version of it where, first of all, I do think he was really, really, really scarred, and he's not the only guy. I mean, like the process of getting on the court has been really, really scarring for a lot of people, and that's really turned them off to the entire process. And also there's a version of it where it could be a silent protest. The Q&A stuff is largely theater.
Okay. Really.
I mean, honestly, like if the Supreme Court hasn't made up their mind before they start taking the questions, like what are they doing? You know what I mean? They've already read all the briefs. The questions are there to help convince other people or show other things.
They've accepted the case in the first place.
Yeah, totally.
We got something to say.
So, I mean, so there's a version of it where he's just like, I'm just out on this entire thing. I'm going to do my thing later.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's not a requirement. Like if he had never written any opinions or he never voted, then I would be like, well, he's not doing his job. It's not a requirement that you ask the questions. And believe me, dude, like they don't televise them, which in my opinion is a shame, but they do record them. And if you listen to them, you won't be like, boy, I wish more people were asking questions.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like there's plenty of people waiting in line to ask questions.
I guess that's true. Okay.
All right. We had the Gulf War in 1991, which I'm sure weighed heavily on your minds as it did mine at the time.
I have a vivid memory of a classmate asking me what my plan was when we got drafted.
Right.
Like it was spring of 1991. And he was like, you know, he was frantic. And he was like, you know, what's your escape plan from the United States? I'm like, for what? I'm like, for the draft. We're going to get drafted and have to go to this war. And I was like, we are not going to get drafted. There's just no way there's support for this war if it involves conscription. It's way too close to Vietnam. And I think 9/10 of us will say not doing it. And then the draft will collapse. And they know that. And so there will be no draft. And he thought I was crazy. He thought like the letter was coming any day. And like, wow. He was really like, worked up and like close to tears about like I don't want to go to Kuwait.
Yeah.
And I so you say it weighed on us. Like I never once thought it was going to come to that.
Okay.
I really
didn't. The media really like I remember having a discussion with somebody where I was like, you know, it's like the fifth biggest military in the world. Like it's there's a lot of guys there and they've been Soviet trained, blah blah blah. I mean, the media really played it up as if it was like unclear
the elite,
what was
going
to happen.
The elite Republican Guard.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what they called him over and over
well,
again.
I mean, I remember like the bomb started going and it also was the first televised war, way more so than Vietnam. And I mean, it's like, it was the first time I remember being like, wow, it's pretty good TV. Like, that's pretty gripping right there. Like you'd see the rocket come in and the building explode. I'd be like, wow, that's not even a movie. Like, that's the thing that's happening. Anyhow, I mean, the hot knife through butter part where they were just like, oh, took a couple of days. We conquered the whole country.
Yeah.
But I mean, the cutting through, like they had the fifth biggest army in the world. And all those dudes are like, we're just, there's a gun behind us. That's the only reason we're here. As soon as they're not going to shoot us, we drop them and run.
Yeah.
So Jeff, your conversation must've been in the early, early spring because it does end.
Yeah.
April 28th or something like that.
Yeah.
It was.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And of course, the Iraqi army lit the Kuwaiti oil fields on fire. A fire that burned till how long? How long to put out those oil fires in Kuwait?
5 years?
Yeah, I thought I was going to guess.
Oh, not that long. No, no, till November. So April still to November.
That's a pretty good fire right there.
Pretty good fire.
Okay. That's a fire.
Nice.
So let's go now to the number one selling album of 1991. Speaking of someone who's on fire.
It's the number one album.
Mariah Carey by Mariah Carey.
To the one that was waiting for me, it took so long.
That's too ballady. I'm doing another one. Hold on.
Better, warmer, closer. Gigantic Madonna fan, and I am generally speaking a fan of this genre. I never warmed to Mariah Carey. Like, I really can't. Like, I can't even name my favorite Mariah Carey song.
Oh, Dream Lover.
How does that one go?
Dream Lover, come rescue me.
Yeah, that's. I mean, maybe this came in like that little valley period in between Madonna and the things that came next.
Like 96. But... I don't know when that was.
Yeah. Dream Lover not in the top 10 on Spotify there.
What?
All I Want for Christmas with its 982 million listens is a little bit ahead.
I guess that's my favorite. That must have been my favorite Mariah Carey song is that one. But I mean, am I wrong? Jeff, is there a Mariah Carey song that you're like, oh, I ride for that?
No, not really. I got to admit, like, I mean, first of all, listening to her next to Natalie Cole, like, she's so much better than Natalie Cole.
She's so much better than
most of the stuff that sounds like that. And if I'm not mistaken, we're in this moment where everything sounds like this. Like, doesn't Wilson Phillips have their big hit, like, right around here? Probably. And it's, like, the same exact backing track and synthy fake guitar sound with ridiculous drums. She can sing her ass off, but I never emotionally connected with it. And I got to be honest, like, I was so turned off by the whole Tommy Mottola thing that it took me years to get over it, right? Like, I mean, that
who's Tommy Mottola?
The guy who discovers her for Sony, like, starts going out with her when she's like 14, and he's a big, like, classic, greasy, cigar-chomping radio executive. I mean, it's a Harvey Weinstein, sick, twisted story before anybody gave a shit about that. And, like, he escapes that, and then goes a little crazy and becomes like, you know, she's in a bunch of rap videos. And like, I always found her so heartbreakingly abused by the system that made her famous that I could never really dig into it. I always felt guilty. I just felt bad and guilty about her whole career from the jump, and I never got over it.
And also, like, rough contemporaries, there are several Whitney Houston songs that I actually like.
Yep.
There are several Paula Abdul songs that I actually like.
And let's not forget Mary J. Blige, who I think
right
who I think crushes her. I think Mary J. Blige is the best of all of the names.
I'm pretty sure. Doesn't the Nina Cherry song come out this year too?
Oh, I mean, Buffalo Stance. That yes. song crushes.
Yeah,
song
and Janet so Jackson's great. A rough contemporary. There's several great Janet. Justify My Love, the Madonna song, comes out this year.
Yeah,
like all of those songs are great. And I just can't. I just have nothing from Mariah Carey. I think I Don't Want to Cry is her biggest hit this year, or maybe Someday.
That's what we were just listening to with Someday.
That's brutal right there.
What's the one where she sings like the microscopic notes at the end, like right. woo, 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 woo. That I remember. She sings the same notes that Minnie Riperton hits in her hit. Loving you, loving you.
Dude, also, I'm looking at the top 100 Billboard biggest hits. Summertime came out this year.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good one.
Fresh Prince went so good. So good.
We're getting off track. Let's get back. Let's reel it in, people.
Yes, sorry.
And let's talk about the singing revolution. Name the three countries involved in the singing revolution.
Yeah, let's reel it back to the dead silence.
Is it Paula Abdul, Mariah Carey, and Madonna? Because if it's not, it? We have no luck. Tim.
Is that why you asked us?
We're talking about the breakup of the Soviet Union.
Okay.
And the three countries that kind of hasten the collapse.
Well, first, we sent Billy Joel over. Are we one of the countries?
And he started yelling at the guys.
Let me do my show. Ukraine is one of them, right?
It's Lithuania,
Latvia, and Estonia. So the Balkans. Nice. All right.
Indeed.
And then there's a million new countries.
Did you say Balkans or Baltic?
Yeah, don't say Balkans.
I said Balkans, but I meant Baltic. I know that Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia all go together.
Nice.
It's something that starts with a B.
All right. Could you, Jeff Simons, indulge us? Are either of you picking Nirvana?
No.
No.
Okay. Could you indulge us with just a little bit of Smells Like Teen Spirit? Because I've got a grunge question for you all.
Okay. We covered this, by the way, in season one for all you new listeners. Hard to turn that song off.
Still gets me. I was reading big year for Nirvana and this album. I was reading a description of grunge, and the writer said it was characterized by distorted guitars, dispirited vocals, and lots of flannel. And I kind of latched on to that idea of dispirited vocals, because in this song, Kurt Cobain sings, "I feel stupid and contagious." Is that kind of the foundation for Radiohead and Thom Yorke to sing Creep, for Beck to sing I Am a Loser? Like, has there ever been kind of this self-loathing in music? What about early punk, Jeff Simons? I mean, this kind of sad introspection, is this?
Yeah, no, that's in punk rock. There's a great old British punk rock song called Jilted John. The name of the song and the band and the album are all Jilted John. And it's a song about being broken up with. And it's hilarious. And it involves the great line, "I was sad that I cried all the way to the chip shop," which is one of my all-time favorite.
And also, I totally recommend it. The guy's got the super extra thick accent. He's like, "Oh, I am Jilted John. Oh, I am very sad. It's so sad with the angry guitars."
Who is he with? Yeah, Julie. And they were laughing at me. But The Clash have a couple of those songs. Like
also,
Lost
I disagree.
Supermarket.
I think dispirited is a terrible word.
Me
That's
too.
A dumb description of
I think
it.
You also, wanted to build off of distorted. Yeah.
It's not the vocals. That's wrong. The vocals are super energetic. Like,
yeah.
If there's anything you can say about Nirvana, is they're yelling. And Pearl Jam, I mean, the vocals are really, really, really into it. It's not that. It's alienation. It's that they're expressing this deep, deep alienation from society. And that's been a lot. I mean, believe me, that's a rock thing going all the way back in the day. Like that, there's a vein of that that runs all the way through. I mean, there's a vein of that that runs through freaking jazz music.
Yeah.
Like popular music frequently, especially popular music aimed at teenagers, frequently includes a heavy, heavy dose of alienation. So,
so basically that's Darkness on the Edge of Town, right? That's Bruce singing about his own alienation.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and it's also, you know, like Chuck Berry feeling left out. And it's also, I mean, and there's like, you know, that's Coltrane. Coltrane is a hugely alienating like voice for sure.
All right. Well,
Can I just say like the whole grunge, the idea that grunge was its own thing, I think I'm actually is the real problem here. Like people have been trying to do this whole slacker Gen X grunge, the flannel joke, right? Like, oh, it was the first set of rock stars that didn't dress sharply or smartly. It turns out to be a giant pile of crap. Like there wasn't really wasn't a grunge movement. There was just a moment when rock music combined Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and punk rock, and it was a little sludgier and a little messier, but then it immediately evolved into something else. Like, I mean, how many grunge bands were there? There's like Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, maybe Nirvana, Dinosaur Jr. Everything else is variations on rock and roll or metal. Or I mean, I just think the whole idea that it was its own, I think Seattle, it was cold. People wore flannel. Those first two bands were from Seattle and everybody was like, oh, it's a thing. I would call Shenanigans on the whole. I loved those bands. I loved them so much, but I was never taking fashion cues from the grunge kids. The whole point was that to not take fashion cues, period. That was the whole point of the whole thing.
And although really, I did wear flannel and a hat all the time. Oh, yeah. I was really into it for sure. And I disagree with Jeff. I thought it was a real thing. I think grunge is an actual thing.
And they were stealing from Scruffy the Cat, a nice Boston band.
Yeah, that's right, Tim. I love the name of that band. I think Scruffy the Cat's a great band name.
Go ahead, play a little Tiger Tiger.
No, I will not.
No, zero. That. Can't help you.
No Tiger Tiger.
Sorry, you're the one who said we're off track. I'm not going to let you go take us into Scruffy the Cat.
All right, then we'll go to death.
Is that fair enough?
I say the clues, you say the name of the person who died in 1991. Music, jazz, inventive, dentist, son.
Dentist is a really fun clue. I haven't got it yet, though.
Dentist. This is Miles Davis. Miles Davis.
It is Miles Davis. Very good. Writer, cat, hat.
Dr. Seuss, Ted Geisel.
Seuss. It's 1-1, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I'm so excited to see who wins. Actor, Angel, Prairie.
Oh, Lorne Greene, Lorne Michaels, Lorne something. Isn't it one of them? This is the.
No.
It's not Lorne Michaels, although that's.
He already died.
Lorne Greene.
Lorne Greene already died. Sorry.
Actor Angel Prairie. It's the guy from, it's the dad from the Waltons, and I can't remember his name.
No, it's the dad from Little House on the Prairie.
Same thing.
And Touched by an Angel, right? That was the actual show he was in?
Michael Hutton.
Michael Landon.
I got the Michael.
Good
I'm
job.
I'm going to take that as a win. I got that one.
It was also a year. Freddie Mercury died.
Yep.
Steve Clark. The original guitarist for Def Leppard. And Eric Carr, who is the drummer for Kiss from 1991.
Yeah. Kiss was never the same after Eric Carr passed away in 1991.
Okay.
These last 30 years, they've just been kind of retreading their old hits. It's been a shame.
Well, I was going to move on to something. Like, he died of heart cancer, Jeff.
Ooh.
I've never even heard of heart cancer.
I don't even want to know that's a thing you can get.
Yeah, I've got enough cancers to worry about right now.
You always bring it. You always bring the middle of the show to this lovely place.
Let's talk about a coup.
We're not going to do our three albums? That's
I'm just kidding.
That's a coup?
Our three albums.
Our three albums.
Jeff, I think you go first.
I'm going first. Okay. So I love the album that I picked this year. I just love it. Everyone has a record or two that takes them immediately back to a moment or a place. And it doesn't have to be a happy place, but it can be so evocative of a moment in your life that you can't shake it. And sometimes that music's not all that good and you're stuck with this like indelible memory, and like Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-Ling is playing in the background. But I am fortunate enough to have this like kind of unforgettable trip with the wonderful soundtrack of a record that I listened to. I have this new thing where I listen to the record on the drive in the morning that we're going to talk about at the podcast that night. I've done it for like the last 4 or 5 years. So all these songs are fresh in my head and I'm super into it. So I had a college girlfriend and we tried to make it work long distance. And I went to California and she went to Michigan. And we had to break up and I wanted to do it in person. And so I was going to go to Ann Arbor for spring break. I had this dear friend who said, you know what you should do? You should take the train. Who takes the train? Who has the time? You could take the train to Ann Arbor. And then
from California?
And then you could take the train back.
Oh.
And my friend...
By the way, I was like, see the country. Jeff. It'll be amazing.
And my friend was like, you don't need your own cabin. That's for, you'll be fine in one of those seats. You're like, what's it? It takes like a day and a half. So I bought just a seat to Ann Arbor, Michigan on an Amtrak.
To break up.
You didn't know she was going to break up with you. You didn't know she was going to break up with you.
I was pretty sure. Breaking up. It was time. It was okay. Anyway, it was delayed 25 hours in each direction. So a 24 hour trip became a 50 hour trip. And it involved like getting off a broken train onto a bus, onto another train, taking a bus from Chicago to Ann Arbor instead. And I met crazy, like a guy got on shirtless with a baby. Took one, like went 20 miles and then jumped off the train and ran off again. Like I talked to crazy people all night and, you know, I didn't have a cabin. So I'm just in this chair and people are coming by and I spent almost all the time I was allowed to in the observation car. And I get there, like she breaks up with me at the state, like we're driving back to her house. Like, so I'm breaking up with you. And I meet her new boyfriend that night. I'm there because I'm 24 hours late. I'm only there for 2 days. I'm there for like 50 hours. And then I get in the train to come home and I'm delayed 24 hours in the way home. I arrive at 3:28 a.m. at the bus stop near my school. And I like walk home, take a shower and drive to work. No sleep. But it's such a great story.
Wait, and I'm pretty sure your wallet got stolen too.
Yes, my wallet got stolen. I forgot about that. I lost my ID. Oh my God. I forgot all about that. And of course I could still get, they don't care. You don't need to show ID to get on a train. They're like, yeah, right. Shirtless man with baby, hop on in. Anyway, I only had like, you know, I had the CD player with like the four CDs and the jacket. And I remember this is their trip where I listened to Court and Spark by Joni Mitchell a lot. And I listened to this record. So this record is the sound of that breakup. Oh. And it's the sound of the end of that, like the end of the college relationship and the beginning of like, okay, it's adult lifetime. And
just to recount, you arrive, she breaks up with you. And that night you meet her new boyfriend.
Yeah. And he was Mr. Rebound. Now I should say,
and also wait, it's Thanksgiving too, right? So you've missed Thanksgiving.
No, it's not Thanksgiving. It's spring break. I miss spring break. Like we don't go, you and I could have gone to LA. We could have gone to Hawaii. I went to Michigan. All this to say, this is a lovely human being who has since happily married and built a wonderful life for herself in Portland, Oregon. And we're in touch. And I saw her at the reunion for Haverford and Bryn Mawr that we went to a couple years ago, and there's no animus here at all, and it's a hilarious great story.
Okay,
but the record of 1991, this artist, I thought was going to be one of my guys. Like, this is his third record. His first record is essentially his home demos that got put into a record. The second record, he did it by himself again, and he used a drum machine and a bunch of loops, and it's good songs, terrible production. But this, when he got it all together, he got a kick-ass band. He recorded it all analog, live in the studio, old tube amps. He's got 12 just killer songs. And the most important thing he does is he hires Richard Lloyd, who was from the band Television, who I've already talked about on this podcast about how much I love to play all the lead guitar. And Matthew Sweet,
yes,
the Girlfriend record in 1991. And I expect the next 10 records to be equally wonderful. He never quite put it all back together. Like, the next four or five records have 2 to 3 great tracks. And he's still a great guy. Like, he did all the Austin Powers background music with Susanna Hoffs from the Bengals. And he's like, everyone loves Matthew Sweet. I love Matthew Sweet. His career did not turn out the way I thought it would based on this record. But Matthew Sweet's Girlfriend, if you like rock and roll, if you like great songwriting, if you like bare bones, no nonsense production where it's just bass, drums, guitar, and great singing, this is your record. You will love this record. Girlfriend, the title track, was a hit. There's a hilarious love song to Winona Ryder. There's a song about falling in love with an evangelical Christian who won't go out with him called Evangeline. There's just a unbelievably great breakup song, and you can't imagine why I liked it so much in this moment, called You Don't Love Me. But it's so good, it's so great.
Let's go.
The first song is a song about religious confusion called Divine Intervention, but I'm going to play the second track because I think it sums up everything this record does. Because this song,
you're not going to do Girlfriend, you should do Girlfriend.
You want me to do Girlfriend?
It's your call, but I mean, that song is like rip shit,
little of both.
Nah, I'll do Girlfriend. Ben's right. Why confuse the audience? So here's the title track, and it tells you everything you need to know about this record. Buzzy, fuzzy, beautiful guitars, killer drums, unbelievable harmonies, and great lyrics. Just snappy, great, quotable lyrics. Endlessly entertaining after 30 years. My pick for 1991 is Matthew Sweet's Girlfriend.
Girlfriend by Matthew Sweet.
And then the second verse, the solos come in. I didn't know nobody. The solos come in afterwards.
Yeah.
Freaking right. Flying. Oh, so good. I've given, Jeff, you go. No, I've given a lot of thought to guitar solos because the great India King Cannon is anti-guitar solo and my daughters are anti-guitar solo.
Uh-oh.
And so I'm like, I played guitar. And so am I just like an obnoxious guitar person? And then I'm like, no. In the right spot, it really expresses what the song is about. It's like how in a movie you get the dialogue and the music and the picture. And when it all comes together, you're like, you get this broader emotional context to it than if you just read the script. And that's what a guitar solo can do. And this song is a perfect example of it. Searing, flying, burning guitar solos that just express this guy. And also, Jeff, at this time, we're early 20s, right?
Oh, yeah.
this such an early 20s vibe.
Yeah, isn't it?
You know what I mean? You're just like, I'm just like, there's just testosterone burning through my body. Like, just amazing. And it really captures it. And also not, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the angry guitar solo, but this joyful, joy in this song, just like his sheer, like, I'm here, I'm alive. It's amazing.
Yes, it's really... For an album that's got breakup songs and songs about things not working out, it's so joyful. It's in love with music as much as it's in love with anything, this record, and really comes across all the way through. And there's not a bad song on there. I mean, like, I listened to the whole thing today, and I got to track 13 before I was like, man, this one's okay. I mean, every single song I was like humming along. I knew all the words. I'm tapping them. I mean, it's great stuff.
Look at all of us fans, three bright green check marks for
three thumbs up for Matthew Sweet. I did it. I'll screw up next week. Don't worry. But this year, I love this record.
All right, Ben, where will you take us in 1991?
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So this is a related topic. Girlfriend is a Jeff Simons album. He loved this one. And I'm going to go backwards. If you've been paying attention, and it's actually been worse in the album collections than it has been in the song collections. It seems like every third album, I'm like, oh, here's another one. Jeff's just like pressed on me, and I think it sucks. just because I'm me, I haven't soft sold it at all. I'm like, nope, listen to that, and I'm still convinced that it sucks.
Okay.
This year, I'm going to choose an album that I did not listen to in 1991. And 1991 was an outrageous. It's a great year of my life. I graduated college. Andy and I were dating. And it's a great music year. My favorite album from this year, and basically my favorite album from 1993 to 2000, like this album sat as my favorite album for 5 to 8 years, is a Jeff Simons selection.
No way.
Jeff Simons told me to listen to.
Oh,
not only that, this is one where Jeff Simons was on it early. And Jeff will tell me whether this is my recollections right or not. I feel like Jeff in 1991 was like, you need to listen to Uncle Tupelo Still Feel Gone. I have a clear recollection of this conversation solely because of the name and my confusion. I thought I'd heard them, and I thought they were like Leftover Salmon. Like, I thought they were a hippie band.
That's
like,
awesome.
I was like, Uncle Tupelo? Why would I listen? That's going to suck. No, I'm not even going to bother to listen to it. Like, I didn't even, like, some of Jeff's recommendations I listened to and then dismissed after one or two listens. This one, I was just like, no, hard no. That name alone means I'm not going to listen to it. When Anodyne came out, then I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Then I went backwards and did it. And it turned out that Still Feel Gone is my favorite Tupelo record. I re-listened to it today. I thought really hard about it. I like this record better than any Wilco record or any Sunvolt record. This is my favorite work of art by these guys.
Wow.
It's not generally even considered the best Uncle Tupelo record. Basically, if you like, some people will choose Anodyne, some people will choose the crazy one with the dates that's just the angry country record. I love this record. Why? First, it's a rock record, and it's old school, old fashioned, burn the building down rock record. Awesome. Second, it's a trio record. And you can actually, when you listen to this record, you can understand where they broke up. As soon as Tweedy starts playing guitar, it was over. Tweedy agreed, super similar to McCartney. He was like, oh, we need a bassist. I'll play bass. That's fine. They actually got another guitarist. They were trying to work it out where Tweedy didn't have to do it, but they worked best as a trio. Three dudes, all basically, Farrar was a year older, all from the same crappy high school in Belleville, Illinois. Buddies from high school got together, and they really, really, really love punk music, and they really, really, really love country music, and they just mash it all together. This is the record where they're actually co-writing the songs. The songs are fantastic. I assume, Jeff, you must love this record and why you recommend it to me.
I mean, love this record.
It's a Minutemen Husker Du record. All the records, it's a replacements record. Like, it sounds like all of these great bands. It sounds amazing. The irony is, did you know this? They weren't crazy about it, and they really didn't like the production of it. Did you know that?
Is that right? I had no idea.
Yeah, totally. They get the guys, the Dinosaur Jr. producers, come in and do it, and they thought it was really like too slick and rock-like, and that's why the 1992 record is made, is because it's a pushback against it. The hilarious thing is, they didn't get paid a freaking nickel by their independent label. They're touring in these crappy clubs, and they consider this to be their sellout record, which
I mean,
makes me laugh
even
really
imagine.
Hard. I'm like, you know what helps when you sell out is when you get the cash. When you sell out, you don't get paid. It's a problem.
Natalie Cole.
There is no selling out here.
It's a different flavor of mood to the Matthew Sweet thing, but it's a total early mid-20s record. They're 2 to 3 years older than the three of us. There's a bunch of sad songs. First of all, there's a bunch of amazing rock songs. Second, there's a bunch of songs about being in a bar and being a loser.
Yes.
There's like four songs that are about that. And then there are several songs that are breakup songs and about how evil, like how sad you are to break up with this girl, like Cold Shoulder and Gun. Yeah. Amazing. Here's what this is another one. I chose a different Uncle Tupelo song for the song of the year. And that was great because I didn't choose my favorite album. I got to do the album in season two. That's this. This is easily my favorite album by them. Second, this is another one of those albums where there's six different songs in this album that are my favorite song on the album. And so I'm going to do the opposite of what I told Jeff to do. The equivalent of Girlfriend in this record is Gun. If you can't sing every word of Gun, then go listen to it right now. It's like a top 25 rock song. It's fantastic. So super awesome. But instead, the last favorite song, the song that has stuck with me and is burned on my brain, if that's all right, Jeff, start at minute 130, please.
Still Feel Gone by Uncle Tupelo.
Till then, it's a slideshow that you're yawning through, or even sleeping, and as a carousel goes round, the slides are still upside down, there's nothing to make out, or even notice. That's all right, and it's all right. That's all right, then it's all right. And if that's all right, then I wanna hear you say it. If that's all right, then it's all right. If that's all right, then it's all right. If that's all right.
So such a beautiful statement of what it's like to be in your 20s. And I remember really vividly the Mad Men episode about the Kodak carousel and how this song echoed in my brain as I heard it. And so the pictures are upside down. They're out of focus. It's super boring. That's what he's describing his own life. And then he comes to the, if that's all right, it's all right. It's just such a beautiful, spectacular, wonderful. It's the last song on the album. And as a bookend with Gun, it just couldn't be any more perfect. Like describing that time in your life and the proper way to live it. Like, it's fine to hang out in a bar and be angry and drunk. That's awesome. It's also fine to be brokenhearted over breaking up. But at the end of it all, it's all right. It's beautiful.
It's a great record. A great pick by Ben. I flip a coin between Anodyne and this record is my favorite. But you're right. This is the reason I fell so hard for this record is I came in with the D. Boone tribute. There's a song called D. Boone about D. Boone from the Minutemen. And then I listened
to it. And the chorus is, this song ain't about nobody.
Yeah, so it's amazing. But then when you listen to Gun, the thing that's so brilliant about this record is there's, I can't believe they think this is a sellout record. There's no click track within 1,000 miles of this band. Like, they're all stops and starts and weird. And like, if you try to go like 1, 2, 3, 4 through any of these songs, you're going to get lost because there's all these weird breathing moments where they pause a little bit of extra minute or they pull it back like Gun, like all that bomb. Well, I'll just play it. Like, you just hear like, this is a band that has played together for 10,000 hours and they just know each other like the back of their hand. And you just so rarely get a chance to hear a band that's bothered to get this good and then allows itself to be recorded in its natural state without being like screwed up by a producer or forced into a click track or overdubbed to death. Like, this is the sound. This is what it must have sounded like when they first played it and they went into a studio and got it right. It's just such a great, it's so great when you get to hear music the way it
today,
was originally
researching
intended.
It, I did the YouTube deep dive.
Yeah.
And there's dozens of 1992 shows of this record, including it at Toad's Place in New Haven, little tiny clubs. And the Gun version, I mean, it's just perfect. You described it perfectly. Like, it's actually sounds exactly like the record. And I mean that as praise. The record sounds exactly like the way they did live.
Yeah. So just listen to how the song starts. And you could hear that, like, you can't chart this. The only way you could play it is to feel where the pauses are along with them. And after you've listened to it as many times as we have, they're all there right there. But I just think this is such a audacious way to start a record.
They recorded that, I think, down the street from where I went to school.
It's in Massachusetts, and they recorded like in a 2-week period.
Right by Wentworth, and I was the style section editor of the Northeastern News at the time, and it just got by me. Didn't know that.
Oh, dude, you were not alone. I mean, I don't think anybody listened to this record. Like, they really were like just percolating at the low end.
Yeah, good stuff. Golly.
Great.
All right. So I got to bring us to a close here. I started out our conversation tonight seeing how much weight we may have gained over the big Thanksgiving weekend. So let's end the podcast with a little bit of chocolate cake.
Woodface by Crowded House.
Pacey, Andrew Lloyd Webber. his trousers fall down as he bows to the queen and the crown. I don't know what tune that the orchestra played, but it went by me, sickly, sentimental. Can I have another piece of chocolate cake? Tammy Baker's got a lot on her plate. Can I buy another deep Picasso
thing? Jeff Simons, what do you think of Crowded House?
Okay, so I actually like this record. I think you picked the worst song on it. Like,
I mean, they're great songs. They got like four or five hits off of this album, right?
There are two songs on this record that just kill me. And one of them is Four Seasons in One Day. But the best song on this record is Fall at Your Feet. Fall at Your Feet is a perfect song. It's so good. It's so moving. I'm still obsessed with it after how many years this has been. But
Did you pick that song?
No, I just love it. I just love it. I'm total. And I fell for it again like 6 months ago. I can't remember why, but like for like a month, every time I was by myself in the house, I was singing Fall at Your Feet. I love that song.
Go ahead, play a little for us.
And I feel like I'm moving inside her, lying in the dark. And I think that I'm beginning to know her. Let it go. I'll be there when you call. And whenever I fall.
That melody kills me. But I feel like Crowded House can't get out of its own way a lot of the time. Like, I really liked Split Ends, which was Neil Finn's first band, because it was so jagged and weird. And there was all these noises. But Crowded House was his attempt to make something kind of more timeless and classic. And they just couldn't. There are just too many tracks where they put in like splort, blap. And like, you got to be really careful when your lyrics are about that afternoon's newspaper, like this, you know, like that's a song making fun of Tammy Faye Baker, you know what I mean? Like, but and I mean, I don't mind that. I think it's fun, but I am not a Crowded House hater. I would imagine that our boy Ben is a Crowded House hater.
We're not even
solid guest.
I'm gonna mute him. So wait, can I before we get to Ben, between Split Ends and Crowded House and solo records, how many albums has this guy put out?
It's a lot.
Right? I mean, a long career.
15 maybe.
Wow.
That's a lot of records. But there, Crowded House is good. I can understand why it's not everyone's cup of tea. But there are 10 Crowded House songs that I really like. I'm sure I could come up with 10 good Crowded House songs, which is great.
Of course.
There are not a lot of bands where you can say there are 10 good songs. So,
Ben Barton, can you name 10? All right, 5 Crowded House songs.
He can't name 3, I don't think. But
I don't really care for them. I'll just leave it to be the last. You can fill in my previous comments.
They're Australian. What do you mean, Beatlesque?
Worse yet.
So here's my...
We just lost Australia, people.
Have you?
No, I love Melbourne, Australia. I've physically been there, but I have no luck for this band.
That's fine. Have you seen, are you going to watch the Beatles documentary?
I started it with my kids the other night.
And you're just not going to watch, Ben, you're just boycotting, not going to watch.
Oh, it was great. It was great.
I saw a really short review on Twitter that said 8 meandering hours that told me nothing. And I was like, okay, fine.
No, yeah, that's totally wrong. That's totally wrong. I'm sad we're not going to get to talk about it on the podcast.
If you want, I'll watch it. I watched the stupid Bee Gees doc. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I found it really deeply moving in ways that I really didn't anticipate, but ultimately it made me incredibly melancholy.
Yeah.
I was so sad when it was over. and I couldn't shake it for like a couple of days. So I'd be interested to talk about it at some point. Although
yeah, I want to talk about
every other podcast about music can only talk about it. So we're actually an exciting change of pace that we're not talking about it. Sure. So
that's good.
That's probably a good call.
Have you seen the new Crowded House documentary? That's what we're going to talk about. It's going to be great.
Woodface is a perfectly fine choice for 1991. This record's got a bunch of good songs on it, and it's really well recorded. And they're a good live band, too.
Yeah. And like a national hero.
Neil Finn.
Yeah. By the way, as long as we're about to sign off, quick update from the... not the research room, the marketing folks. We have the most listens in the United States. We have the second most listens in England. The third most listens of our podcast are in Canada, but Canada is about to get passed. Which country has been downloading us like crazy over the last 2 months and is about to get into third place?
I would imagine it's the Balkans, right?
I hope it's the United Arab Emirates. I'm rooting for them.
India.
Oh,
India. Oh, perfect.
We've gone big time in India. It's really exciting.
That's awesome. A lot of folks over there. So as I said, that's big there. We're going to be
that's
a
big market.
It's a big market. I'm into. So if you're listening in India, hello, have no idea how you came to us.
Hit us up on Twitter. I'm going to India next summer. So I want to meet some visitors. I mean, nice. Meet some listeners.
We have had some good Twitter back and forth. We've had some, I appreciate those of you who are engaging with us on Twitter. It's been a ray of sunshine on an otherwise cloudy day. Very often.
It's great. All right. Well, you guys have a wonderful week. Back to the grind. And I'll probably see you this Wednesday when we do 1990.
Yeah, exactly. See you in 48 hours. Hey, Ben, does hope spring eternal for Tennessee basketball this winter? How are you feeling?
Oh, big time.
They look good.
I freaking love this squad. I love them. I was devastated. I was actually really surprised, not devastated. I was super surprised they didn't play better against Villanova, but they ran UNC out of the gym.
Yeah.
And dude, our freshman guards are just the greatest. Like, I couldn't be more like enthusiastic and infatuated. I love it.
That's awesome.
Speaking of Tennessee, your volleyball team is taking on Chapel Hill this Friday in the first round of NCAAs. So
nice.
Go Vols.
You guys should have some kind of bet that I can watch from a distance.
Okay.
You guys can work that out offline, I suppose.
All right.
Oh, wait, I had another question. Shoot. I had another pithy, fun question, but it'll wait for 48 hours till the next time.
Right. All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Bye, friends.
Fellas.
Bye. Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes, give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout, and then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electricast.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electricast. Electricast.